Hello, listeners. My name is Mark. If you have been enjoying the Listener Lore episodes, please come over to my separate podcast feed, Lorehammer Listener Lore. On this daily podcast channel, I will be reading one story a day and sharing your creative works with others and giving my feedback at the end. So, if you like grimdark 40k short stories, come join me at Lorehammer Listener Lore, the 40k podcast where you get to write the script.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the podcast. If you want to support the show, visit us at patreon.com, and for as little as $1 a month, you can become a patron. Or you can buy cool Lorehammer products like shirts, coffee mugs, and dice bags at www.redbubble.com. Don't want to spend any money? Well, you can help out the show by giving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also hop on over to Facebook and like our page, and feel free to send us a message. It's the only enjoyment Mark gets out of his miserable life. Welcome to Lorehammer, Listener Lore 2.
Welcome back to Lorehammer. This is our second Lorehammer. So Listener Lore 2, The Electric Boogaloo.
Attack of the
Boogaloo. Attack of the Clones. Welcome to this episode. Yeah. My name is Eric.
Hey, I'm Mark.
This is Jordan.
And joining us today for the very last time.
The Eternal Christian.
Mm. Oh my gosh. Oh, that's so bad.
I am eternal.
Just bring that mic a little closer to you.
It's really ramming down your throat.
Just up, like up. If ever you eaten a banana.
Yeah, there you go. Now Harry Chewbacca.
There you go. I should never told you. That's so gross. I don't want to think of Christian doing that at all. Anyways, this is our lore episode where we're finally getting around to sharing a couple more stories as given in by you.
The people.
I should just sneak that into every episode.
You probably almost have without even
unconsciously. Yeah, I don't even. I bet there's community episodes, like community quotes riddled through this.
You know what? No, you've been pretty good with not doing community quotes. I think it's been long enough that's out of your system.
Well, now I just need to go rewatch it.
Hopefully. It's going to be a sad couple months of quotes from you.
7 seasons in a movie? Anyways. So today we're going to read some stories that you guys have submitted. And then we're going to chat. We're going to say what we liked, what we think.
We have a very strict rating scale.
Of course.
It's all about the twitch of the dong.
It's either a potato or not a potato.
Exactly.
And it's pass-fail on this system. But we don't know if the potato is a pass or if the not potato is a pass.
Interesting.
We'll let the listeners decide.
You can be a potato or not a potato. You take it however you want. You can make mashed potatoes. You can do scalloped potatoes.
They're your potatoes.
They're your potatoes. I don't care what you do with them. Anyways, I say we dive right in. Jordan, you want to read the first one?
Sure, but it's still loading for me, so maybe.
Well, in that
I'll
case,
go next.
Yeah, I will read the first one then. And this is from Austin, and I think he wrote to us about Eldar because the first line is "The Mask of the Endless Step."
That's a pretty good guess.
You never know.
Never know.
Hard to say. Hard to say. Anyways, here we go. The Endless Steppe, a desolate region perched atop an arid mesa, the world's highest point. Clouds of thin ochre gas traced the bottoms of peaking stone mountains and bluffs. It was serene, the perfect place right out of a performance or story. If the war could be muted, one would never know the horrors kept in check amidst the cloud-piercing mountaintops. Webway portals, some crumbled, some preserved, dotted the horizon. This ancient land, once bearing a cornucopia of wraithbone and spirit stones, had long been dried up and left in a chaotic wake of ash and dust. A world seemingly null and void of purpose somehow remained locked in war. The webway entries constantly berated by chaos, and the demons of Slaanesh crashing upon the lands tirelessly, hunting for a way in, gave the mask purpose. It was the mask of the endless step that protected these gateways, ever vigilant, silent, and steadfast. The war was eternal. A divine comedy of sorts, reminiscent of an adolescent force repeatedly disciplined and kept in line, yet unrelenting. It reeked of insanity, their results never changing. Each Harlequin loss was a tragedy, but laughable as they returned to Kegarak's embrace in the face of countless demonkin torn apart. Demonic princes, exalted champions, forces of the pleasure cults, and Slaanesh-marked legions alike all tried, but never entered the webway through the endless step. They would not. Shuriken fire cut through the serene visage. Pistols and cannons opened up, splitting ceramite and mutated flesh, dropping the legionnaires. Chaos Marines and warp-spawned abominations were pushed from the tops of the mountainous bluffs and left plummeting through the skyscape to their fate below. They fought silently, hailing from the once populous Silent Shroud. Battling in silence and utilizing fear tactics to horrify their opponents was how they broke them. Even the demonic forces of chaos could be taught fear. Mirror Walker knelt. The stacks on her back-mounted launcher rippled and wavered in the heat of the air as canisters of hallucinogenic gas lobbed away. 3 seconds. The near-impossible form of her torso shimmered in and out of the light's perceivable spectrum. Her footing became loose as the abominable, brutish hulk of twisted flesh and machine lashed towards her. But she was already gone, flipping through the air. Its hell-forged whips scraped the ground, unable to connect with her glimmering skin. Leaping above, she teased the tortured machine with shuriken fire across its hull. 2 seconds. The canisters of neurotropic gas caught up to her, slowly passing her quick form. She delighted in watching them pass, so relatively slow, she could reach out and touch them. The hell brute tried to keep pace with the dancing shadow seer. It could not. 1 second. Gas began to trail from the glowing red canisters, foretelling a hallucinogenic hell about to unfold. She spun her staff, decoupling the spiked cabling on the monster's plasma cannon. Its crazed state made her grin. A face shone upon her reflective mask. It was not her own, but that of the once-living Emperor's Children Primarch, cackling and laughing, changing into the lad of the laughing god, playing to the enemy's frustration. Then it went black. 0 seconds. The canisters burst across the Hellbrute's torso. Translucent gas shined, warping the light around the monstrosity. Mirror Walker was already gone. Over her shoulder, the crazed abomination slammed the ground, shrieking, tearing its own limbs apart in confused death throes. Silence followed, but already her bounding form was too far to have heard. Stitchix grinned. It peeked from beneath the chipped Harlequin mask, hiding the incomplete side of his face. He was enjoying this, as he always did. The whirling maelstrom of gore that painted the air around him seemed frozen in time. He observed his beasts of war, pounding and thrashing with their massive microscalpels, pulverizing the unlucky demonettes nearby. Tails unwound in a flurry of splinter pod fire, as the Talos carved a path for the homunculus master. He surveyed the corpses beneath their hovering bodies as they cut forward. Seldom coming across the mask of a fallen player, he lowered himself. Curiously, the mechanical tentacles condensed along his spine, lowering his feet just above the hot earth, but not touching. His skin was so fragile and pale. Scraping his feet across the rocky dirt beneath was pain not warranted at this time. There was plenty abound. It filled him. He could feel every slashing gesture of his pain engine puppets, and it satisfied him. Clutching a fractured porcelain mask, whose white surface was dusty and stained by the dark ichor spilt by demons, Stitchitz opened his long, fleshy coat. He pierced the side with a makeshift hook of scrap metal and hung the mask inside. It clattered gently as it bumped the others. The Collector, as the troop referred to him in their stories, and his flesh-crafting talent was a welcome addition. The sheer force and terrifying presence of the dark green pain engines played so well into their performances. Stories were told by each troop as it traveled of horrifying abominations wrangled and driven to war by the mysterious Collector, Stitchix. It was a symbiotic relationship. The mask gained an invulnerable backbone in combat, an engine for horror, and it stroked his ego. That is why he chose to live permanently among the troop, outside of the webway, and far from Kimora. He had his fill here of battle, pain, and gore, from which to perform his fleshcraft. It was the perfect life. Stitchix grinned.
Fancy.
Thought you were reading an audiobook then.
Yeah.
Pretty much was.
Yeah. It was well written.
Yeah, it's a good story. It's very descriptive.
Yeah,
I account it to be a good story because it had lots of words that I didn't know what they meant. So the bigger the words, the better the author.
Yeah.
That's kind of
That's why the dictionary to you is the best book.
Yes. You can't read it.
No, you can't. Well, there's no pictures. How could you?
No, that was cool. I liked that there wasn't anything over the top. Like, it's cool. You should just...
is a regular mask.
Yeah, just guarding the webway from demons. Like, yeah. A simple story. Not everything has to be grand and over the top.
It's very, very, very believable.
Yeah. Plus, who doesn't like some violence when you're reading some lore?
Yeah. So. I also liked the inclusion of a Dark Eldar.
Yeah.
Which was interesting. And how he's part of the troop. And he continues to practice his craft as part of that troop, which was kind of cool.
Mm, flesh crafter.
I give it a resounding not a potato.
One resounding what, which was odd because I was definitely going to say potato.
Oh. Do you know what a potato is?
Well, everything
have you ever
is
seen a potato.
Everything is well. It doesn't matter. It's my potato. I do whatever the hell I want with it. And if I choose to give it to this guy, to Austin, he gets a potato.
No, I fully agree. Definitely well written. Isn't like chapter masters of every stripe and every major character.
Together and they exactly. beat down Khor.
Yeah, no, it's very simple. It's like the story of like a single guardsman. A small troop of. Of Eldar doing what they do.
Yeah, it's an individual story.
Yeah.
Right?
I think it's definitely a character driven. I'm guessing if he plays, he probably has the models for these characters. And it's more character driven than like...
Yeah, we don't know their history. He's probably got that one homunculi.
Yeah.
We don't know their history, their background. Like, why that homunculi decided to leave Kamora. But but I'm sure the story is there somewhere. If he sends us the rest of his book, then maybe
the prelude. Find
out. Yeah.
No, it was good. Not everyone's army. Like everyone creates a different story for their army, right? So he created a snapshot of how they look. So it could even be that he fought demons at one point, and it was a really cool battle to him, and he wrote a story about it, right? Which I think is cool. It's cool to take inspiration from your actual Warhammer games and apply them. Into fiction.
We did it. We rated the shit out of that story.
Yeah, it was good. I fully enjoyed it. I definitely think there's information that's missing.
Like
just the origin story. I'm a sucker for origins.
Like what, why is that
sure, like where did they come from? Yeah, like why, how do they accept the homunculi as like part of their troop, right, as part of their mask? Is there any other defining features of their mask that sets them apart from other ones? So all things that can be answered, but things that weren't important for this story. You didn't need to know that for this story.
I'm
just gonna mess with my mic real quick, so I apologize for any sound interference.
We can't even hear it. Just
wiggle it.
It's not.
Jerk it.
It's not staying
jerk
up.
Harder.
It doesn't stay up.
Yes, it does.
I tried, Jordan.
Okay, you guys.
That
keep
sounds like a personal problem.
Okay, Christian, you want to read the next one?
Yeah. My mic's gonna get fixed.
Okay.
Because I was ramming it down my throat. Apparently, it's not what you're supposed to do with it. Now it won't stay up anymore.
Okay, I'll read the next one. I'm going to read the one that I want to read, though, because it involves Primaris Marines.
Ah, and I see.
I love me some Primaris Marines.
Oh, so. You're lying. It's just the shortest one.
Busted. Totally busted. Called me out.
All right.
But also, I love Primaris Marines.
Of course. Who doesn't?
Deep down inside, they are truly what I want.
Oh, I've seen a little tease in here, and I think I'm going to be interested as well.
So this one is by Nathaniel.
Could you still hear
Nathaniel Garrow? Yeah.
No. Just Nathaniel.
Oh, well, you never know.
40K person writing a book about 40K.
It's hard to say.
No, he's writing a book about real life. An average dude.
How to make friends and influence people as a space marine. You don't. It's a very short book.
It should be called How to Lose Friends and Alienate.
How to Lose Friends and Kill the Aliens.
Yeah. Kill the alienated people.
I would let Eric read that book to me. All right, so this story is by Nathaniel. Eric, how would you say this first? Heinrichtus?
Yep.
Let's go with that. Heinrichtus Ulrich is a Primaris Space Marine who made a name for himself during the Black Templar's time with the Indominus Crusade or whatever other conflicts the Black Templars have had with their new spiffy bros. The Grim Sergeant has proven his undying zeal and hatred for the face of the alien traitor in which With the galaxy in turmoil, there is only one place he can find solace with which he smites the wicked, that being faith in the Emperor's divinity. With his litanies unending...
I feel like we just need that and some litanies in the background while we're reading this. We can get some candles in here.
Ah, yes. With his litanies unending, the blood on his relic power sword never dying, Heinrichtus promotion to the sword brother was quick. However, with his new leadership position, he seems to be running away with his authority that he has been given. Much akin to the ritual meditation done by all neophytes before battle in search of the next emperor's champion. Heinrichtus spends much time praying and meditating to the god emperor, claiming to hear his holy voice. The sword brother is tasked with quests of what he sees as divine in nature. While he is not deep in prayer and meditation, he closely watches his battle brothers closely. Interesting.
He wants you to know it's very close.
Very close. So he watches them closely, and then he watches them closely.
It's like you can hear him breathing over your shoulder. It's that close.
What are you doing over there?
Redundancy notwithstanding.
Making notes of individual strengths and weaknesses, assessing who delivers the Emperor's holy wrath in a manner that most suits his holy tasking. Before battle, he makes use of his honored status to compose crusader squads of different compositions and strays from the crusade's main doctrinal missions for the battle to come. With the holy words of the God Emperor guiding his actions and the actions of his chosen champions.
Companions. That's what it says.
Oh, it does. Okay.
Yeah. So. I can just picture you reading in class.
I never had to. I never did. I went to East Side. That's why I'm so bad at reading. The teacher is like,
all right, Mark, if you could read it. And he just goes, no.
No, I cannot. Thanks. Thanks, though. The enemies of all mankind will find no pity, no remorse, and no fear in Heinrichtus Ulrich. So to explain a bit for what I'm doing on tabletop.
Oh, so this is now Nathaniel just talking.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I want to have a character... leader stay the same, heavily kit-bashed, of course, and have another 10 or so models that I can switch in and out and equip my kill team with different tools and still follow Black Templar's fluff. Emphasis on close combat, scouts being mentored by full-fledged Battle Brothers. They would almost remain unnamed just to make things a little easier on me. Hope you enjoy the fluff. Yeah, so it's like a kill team lore, essentially.
Yeah, I'm very character, like almost just one character story, too.
The cool thing about this is that he... talks a lot about how zealous Heinrichtus is while also dropping a hint of like he's overzealous to the point of claiming to hear like the voice of the emperor, which a lot of people do, but
if you're not an ecclesiarchic priest,
right? Like, are you worthy of hearing the voice? Is it really his voice?
Is it demons?
Exactly. So that, like, and while I'm a totally a Black Templar nerd fan, and Black Templars obviously are the most pure, pious of all Space Marines.
Of course. Naturally. I've read that somewhere. Yes.
Yeah. And that they've never once turned to chaos, you know.
They're all things that are good.
All things that are good, yeah. It's kind of cool to think that this Heinrichtus could potentially go balls to the wall.
A little too far.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And with his whole, like, watching things, like, is he watching for potential... is he watching for your devotion, or is he watching to see if you're easy to persuade and kind of seduce over to his way of thinking? There could, and I don't think this is what Nathaniel is going for.
Depending on the person you are, you could attribute some dark motivation to him. Like, Eric, you're attributing dark motivation,
dark secrets. Yes.
Because, Eric, you don't trust people. So you think that this righteous Black Templar guy who's doing the Emperor's work is actually a bad person.
I'm not saying he is a bad person. I'm saying I wouldn't be surprised if he was a bad person.
Yes.
No, but like, it's there's a lot. You could go either way with this, which is kind of nice. It's left up in the open.
A third interpretation is that he's like almost like a Dirty Harry, like, you know, that loose cannon cop that like just stays outside of the rules. He's still like the main character, you know, just
always pushing a little bit, a little too far sometimes.
Yeah, but he's not the bad guy.
Yeah,
he's definitely just he does things differently.
Yeah, like I could see him destroying an entire planet in the name of the Emperor.
Right, of course.
Because the Emperor's voice told him to do it.
Exactly. And in the end,
all those people deserved it, though.
It's kind of like how a possessed demon will like take your order too far. Hmm. Or not a possessed demon, a possessed human. right? How, like, they interpret orders differently.
Oh, yeah, yeah, like, yeah.
And they'll they'll take everything to the extreme. If you say go kill that one guy, like, they'll kill an entire city block just to make sure he's
dead.
That
one guy's dead, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. I could kind of see this guy doing that.
Doing horrible things.
Right. But I could also just see...
The hero of the Imperium.
Maybe he sells his soul to a sword and kills all his own people in order to stop the plague from carrying on.
What's with you and WoW lately?
I don't know.
I mean, technically, he never sold it to the sword. He's... Frostmourne was just a...
He is the sword. The sword is always
Ner'zhul is the first.
Is in the helmet, though.
Yeah.
Eric, I've been reading.
Oh, I can tell, yeah. You never want to talk about World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
New podcast, World of Warcraft.
Oh, no.
There's a lot. Yes. There's a lot.
Yes.
I bet there is. Yeah. I might have to look at one.
It's all right. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, ultimately... I think it's a decent setup for some cool narratives.
Yeah. No, it's just a good little kill team story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like that he directly associates, like, this is my plan, this is what I'm doing on the tabletop, and correlates that to his story. Yeah. That definitely bonus points.
Yeah.
Still not a potato, though.
Which is odd, good because or bad. I was definitely going to give it a potato.
Huh. Good or bad, depending on how you rate the potato scale.
Yeah, it depends on how you see the potato. It's your potato. What I would like to see is the model for Heinrichtus.
Yeah, yeah.
So he said, heavily kit-bashed, of course.
Uh-huh.
What kits is he bashing?
I can just see him using the Primaris Chaplain.
Okay.
Like, oh, yeah. That would look nice.
That'd be cool. Yeah. Big sword.
Mm, what big sword?
Frostmourne, I think is...
get out. Get out.
Fuck out of my library.
That's the wrong colors.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's cool. Yeah, send us some pictures.
Send us Nathaniel. A picture, Nathaniel. I would love to see Heinrichtus.
I want him to name all his other characters.
All 10 of them?
Yeah, and then right, if they die...
Ready? Go.
Wait, no, wait.
Well, no,
if they die, he starts having to replace him with new ones.
One of them is already named, isn't it? Oh, no, his name is Heinrichtus Ulrich.
Yeah.
I forgot
Ulrich. And the other one is Arthas, and the other one is Menethil, and the other one is... Michael. What's the dad's name?
I don't know, but there's Uther.
Uther?
Uther.
Tyrion.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm only a paladin.
Varian.
Varian Rin.
Varian Rin.
You're gross.
Huh.
Okay. Name them after dragon aspects if you're going to name them after anything.
Or
the Knights of the Silver Hand. Come on.
German names. Just German names.
Knights of the Ebon Blade, even.
Name one Marcus.
All Death Knights.
No. Not well educated. That name.
Thank you, Nathaniel, for sharing, obviously. Let's do another one. Jordan, you want to read Matthew's?
Sure. Is that Kelshan Enclave? Matthew, yeah. Kelshan.
Ooh, a Tau.
My guess is this is Tau.
Kel'Thalas.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my.
Obviously Eldar. Knight Eldar.
Okay.
Eldar.
The story of this cadre started on a distant orbital colony on the fringes of Kelshan space. Kelshan is a Tau sept world. See Forge World for more info on that sept. During a routine ping sweep of the dark void bounced back a signal of a large flotilla. On discovery of a known first contact, they do what Tau do, straighten up the leaflets and launch a propaganda probe at the oncoming fleet to spread the glorious ideals of the greater good. For some reason, the oncoming fleet didn't even acknowledge the probes. Well, anything. No words, no nothing. And without any type of psyker on board, or for that matter, anywhere in the Empire, they had no idea the shitstorm about to hit their front door. Long story short, the High Fleet tore them apart and moved it onto Kelshan to wreck face with a bunch of cool stuff and Forge World models, etc., etc., etc. Buddy bro fist with the guard, all that jazz. On that first orbital, a few survivors remained. The cadre's commander was inside a Cold Star battlesuit, which helped him survive. Along with the Ghost Keel battlesuit and six XV-25 stealth battlesuits, most likely they just cloaked and hid because meeting Tyranids for the first time was absolutely terrifying. But we won't judge them. I mean, come on, that shit's nuts. They boarded an Orca dropship and headed toward Kelshan, only to start running into more destroyed orbital war spheres, diplomatic ships, and a variety of Tau Empire sept worlds. The commander made a decision to begin rescuing survivors as penance for the lives lost under his protection on the orbital. Survivors were offered safe passage from home for aid, slowly retrofitting larger and larger space vessels. Most survivors ended up staying to assist in the rescue efforts. Eventually, enough Earth-cast survivors were found to retrofit an entire orbital station to be a massive colony battleship. They eventually found a small cadre of Endros, a secretive Sept world, to say the least, boasting things such as the creation of the Ghost Keel battlesuit. This Sept met a tragic fate at the hands of the Imperium, in which an Ethereal had been captured for study, and they were searching for her, raiding Imperium worlds around the sector. She was lost. She was found dead and experimented on for study. However, a child was also found and rescued and raised into the Kelshan Enclave to become the first Ethereal not raised by her caste, but raised by the survivors of the Tyranids' invasion of Kelshan. To this day, they have become a massive fighting force who has kept their distance from native Tau, only returning survivors from conflicts home to retire or laid to rest. Due to the humanitarian and now militaristic achievements of this enclave, they have become close with both the Empire and Farsight enclaves, bringing trade for more advanced equipment, to even sneaking out those out of Tau who may want to join the Farsight or Kelshan enclave. Bonus lore, arguably the best, it's short. That Ethereal I mentioned once almost got shot by an assassin, but before it hit her, a Kroot jumped in front of the shot, being crippled, but saving her life. So they paid him well.
Did that happen on tabletop? Is that why that's there?
It's kind of cool, though, if that did happen on tabletop.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all right. I like Tau. Tau are neat. I like that, by the sounds of it, even though there was an Ethereal, the child that was an Ethereal and wasn't raised by an Ethereal was still an Ethereal and is still in charge.
And treated as such,
yeah. And treated as an Ethereal. Like, because the Tau need the caste system. Without it, without the caste system...
No, I say we abolish communism.
No, it's... They're not communists, fuck you! he could have went like, oh, and a Fire Warrior, like, took command, like...
Could have turned that into a Farsight.
Exactly. But he stayed kind of... Oh, I liked it. It was different enough from the Farsight enclave.
It's almost like when you have, a child king, or, for whatever reason, I pictured, Buddhist temples when they go find the resurrected Dalai Lama.
Oh, like their priestess or whatever?
Dalai Lama, yes. Okay. Yeah. When they find the resurrected one. But, they could still be a child, and they're all, revere this child. And
yeah.
The child is supposed to be wise and everything, so it's...
And supple.
Yeah, it's... Okay. Don't make this weird. And it's cool too, because I never honestly have thought about Ethereals being children or any Tau being children.
Mm, yeah,
just think of them as the disgusting race that they are.
Space cows.
One thing that I would say is
sure,
and that doughy eyed stare. Yeah. Just before you put the bolt to their head. Anyways, one thing that I think verges on dangerous territory is the being friends with everyone, the Empire, and
yes, the Tau Empire.
Yeah. And yeah, the Enclaves starting to get into that area where Snowflake Town,
we can do everything.
Yeah. It's not so bad that it's I refuse to acknowledge it, but it's
starting. It's easy enough to justify it too, they can just tell the Tau Empire that, no, we don't deal with the Farsight.
Yeah, exactly. Enclaves. They could lie or be underhanded, or they could even act as intermediaries. We don't associate with them, but we can...
We know what's... We still watch them, and we'll sell you information on them. Exactly. It's vice versa.
There's lots of ways you can go around
that. It could even be less of a friendship and more of a... The Empire doesn't even want to acknowledge the existence of the Farsight Enclave, right? So they pay these third-party... to watch over them because the Empire doesn't have anything to do with it. Because
they don't exist.
So, yeah.
So here's the only weird thing about this lore, though, I guess.
Oh.
The only weird thing. Sure. Nothing else is weird about it.
Yeah.
Why is it not a part of the Tau Empire? Why is it an enclave?
That's a good question. Okay, right? Like potentially, maybe they wouldn't
be reabsorbed, right?
Yeah.
It's not like they're separate, like far enough distance wise, or they're intentionally trying to. Maybe they're intentionally trying to be separate. Different, but like by the sounds of it, they're still
on good
doing
terms.
The caste system, yeah. And that's the whole reason Farsight is an enclave because they don't believe in that anymore, really.
Yeah.
So maybe send us an email when you hear this and tell us why. They didn't just get absorbed back into the Tau Empire because they're on good terms with the Tau Empire.
Yeah, and then they just fall back into the word enemies of the Enclave. Like,
yeah.
So yeah.
Plot hole. What if you just refuse to go back?
Why though? Like,
but then the Empire,
there's nothing in their lore that like.
I think they just wanted to like. Well, he said he started rescuing people as penance. So that's his reason for doing what he's doing.
Maybe the Empire doesn't want them back.
But then they probably wouldn't even trade with him to begin with.
Well, I mean, like, it could be that, you know, slap on the wrist, not so much cut off your head type deal.
It might also, he might only just be calling it an enclave. No, because he specifically says, like, he's not really part of the Tau Empire. So I was going to say, like, yeah.
Well, it's a question best laid to the author.
No, we have to speculate.
We're going to put words in his mouth.
Yeah.
And,
send us a message. Why are they not just a part of the Tau Empire again? Like, yeah. Other for that, interesting.
Yeah.
Good enough.
I like it. I like the humanitarian aspects. Not something you get a lot in 40K.
Oh, definitely not. Yeah.
It's believable for the Tau, right? Like,
yeah.
You can go outside of the theme or the message of 40K, but in instances like that, like, yeah, I buy it.
If anyone is going to do it, it's
going to be the
Tau. It's going to be the Tau or like Eldar for their own race. Look at it. Right. Eldar don't give a shit about anyone else. What is there? Is there any other enclave, or is the Farsight the only one?
Farsight's the only one.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Yeah. Because even...
I don't know enough about Tau, to be honest. So.
Yeah, even like that fourth sphere of expansion that got flung across the galaxy and has that like Startide Nexus or whatever they call it, that's still a part of the Tau Empire. They don't call it...
Detached.
Yeah.
Cut across by space and time.
Mm. And love.
So much love.
So many couples separated.
Don't worry, they can just make other...
But like, yeah, I have no problem other enclaves. It just has to be a reason why they stay in enclave.
Did you refuse to go back into the Tau Empire, or did they refuse you back into the Tau Empire?
But
it's an interesting thought. I never didn't even register with me. It was just like, oh, cool, they're doing their own thing. Yeah.
Tau aren't known to do that.
They aren't known to do that?
Are not.
Oh, that's...
All right, Christian, read the last one we're doing today.
All right, this story is called Jeffrey. Submitted by Jeffrey. And I don't know what it's about. I did no pre-reading, so I'm going in blind. Half-cocked and full of vigor. So let's do this.
Okay.
The World Serpents are founded in the 41st millennium.
Just imagine you reading and where the teacher calls upon you. Fucking dick.
You're ruining Jeffrey's story. All right. The World Serpents were founded in the 41st millennium at the start of the Achilles Crusade. The new chapter was immediately flung into the conflict, fresh out of the gate, and were it not for the tactical genius of their chapter master, Lord Salazar, the Poison Fang, the chapter would have been destroyed. Although they have not been around as long as other chapters, they have seen so much combat in the Jericho Reach that they have plenty of Astartes that one could consider heroes and veterans. Their base of operations was the death world of Pallas and the edge of the Jericho Reach until the planet was obliterated by the opening of the Great Rift. The chapter fleet immediately flew to the aid of their homeworld when they heard the news. It was in vain, however, as there was nothing left of the planet, and instead to meet the arriving fleet was a portion of the Black Legion. The chapter lost a significant number of Astartes that day, including their chapter master, Salazar. Finding a successor was difficult, as much of the chapter's leadership had been killed. One Astartes was elected by the survivors for the position, and he took up the mantle of chapter master. His name was Angeas. Angeas?
Anguis? Who knows?
Anus.
No, there's a G in there for sure.
The G is silent.
The G is silent. Angeas, and the most unlikely thing about this event was that he was a tech marine. He achieved the position due to the Grand Master of the First Company appointing him to captain the ship, the Black Crucible, while he led a boarding party against the forces of Chaos. The Grand Master was killed in action, leaving Angeas to lead the remains of the First Company to take in taking back Nightbreaker, the capital ship of the World Serpents. They fought their way with the help of survivors to the bridge, just too late to save Salazar from being mortally wounded by a demon prince. Angeus is famously rumored to have then taken up the Chapter Master's fallen sword and beheaded the warp spawn. He gained the title of the Shepherd and led the chapter on a new course. They began the slow process of recruiting new forces from neighboring worlds to rebuild their chapter, but the process was slow, and without a proper homeworld or fortress monastery, it took even longer than it usually would. Upon learning of the chapter's plight, Gulliman sent a detachment of Primaris Marines born of the Lion's Gene Seed to fill the ranks of the weakened chapter. There was animosity at first due to the clear heretical nature of the newcomers, but they knew that they were in no position to turn away help. Sorry, Mark.
Because Primaris.
Primaris are the best. I should have read this story.
They constructed a new fortress monastery upon their flagship, once called Nightbreaker, now renamed Palace Requiem, and have been adding on to it ever since, until it has become something of an artificial space hulk, a mobile fortress 4 to 5 kilometers long and 1 to 2 wide. The World Serpents soon found that having a mobile command base suited their secretive needs much more than their old home world ever did. I'm almost breaking out into tears over this story. It's so sad. However, they do not feel ready to rejoin the Crusade yet, and instead spend their time defending the 6 worlds that are now their recruitment stock and regaining their strength. They are a successor chapter of the Dark Angels and the Sons of the Lion. Heraldry, a bone-white snake devouring its tail on a black or dark gray field. Colors, dark gray or black shoulders, helmet, and power pack, and dark green for the rest of it. Warcry, remember Jormungandr, remember the fallen. Motto, strike like a cottonmouth from the swamp. Culture and facts of the world, serpents. I don't know.
Your high gothic.
My high gothic is starting to...
Terra Serpentis.
The world serpents are not codex compliant and prefer to keep their activities secret from everyone else. Classic Dark Angels. They will work with other imperial forces but prefer to work alone. After the destruction of Palace, they have since resorted to scavenging anything they can get their hands on. Rather than cobbling things together like the orcs, however, their tech marines utilize salvage technology with tactical and precise engineering efficiency. This doesn't stop their armor and vehicles from looking somewhat odd, though, as they take bits and pieces from whatever they can get their hands on, including things from Chaos Space Marines and old remnants of the 31st millennium, such as Mark III iron armor.
Heresy!
No, save it till the end. The chapter also delves considerably into the realm of the Immaterium. Their psychers are searching through the warp for their long-lost planet, hoping against hope that it might still be intact, floating in the warp. I would not hope.
Do not look to hope in these lands. Or do not look to hope it has forsaken these lands?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stop quoting things. Do you ever have an original thought, Eric?
Even this whole episode, all I've been doing
just
is
reading other people's stuff.
All around me familiar.
Their old homeworld of Palace was a swamp-covered wasteland, its denizens living out a putrid existence harvesting biomass from the swamps in order to fuel the war machines of the Imperium.
I can see why they want it back.
The inhabitants of this death world proved to be great hunters and ambushers, quite adept at sneaking through and under the bogs to capture the various fauna that existed there. Now the recruitment worlds for the chapter are Kyrioth, a hive world, Melora, a jungle death world full of incredibly dangerous flora and fauna, Malkazar, a desert world with a harsh, arid climate, Azazel 4, a dead world inhabited by scavengers. Is that 4?
Yeah.
Yeah. You can just give me a look.
Well, I was just surprised you'd even question yourself on that. Oh. It's Roman.
I know, but my left and my right are, that scare me.
Your side or my side?
Exactly. Where was I? A dead world inhabited by scavengers. It was once the site of a great battle during the Horus Heresy. This world is where the world serpents acquired most of their scavenged tech. In orbit, there is a wreckage of 1,000 ships, and on the planet below, untold hundreds of fallen space marines from both sides of the conflict. Their armor and weapons perfect for salvage. Shelion, a mineral-rich world that neighbored Jormungandr, and now the once-lost colony on Flam, which was rescued by the chapter from invading Tyranids and Tau forces. Tactics. The serpents employ a variety of weapons in tactical ambushes, utilizing teleportariums to send their terminator squads into action in surprise attacks against various enemies. They once retook the entire city of Vostok by transporting Terminators inside the city's sewers and then climbing right upwards into the middle of rebel encampments, slaughtering the unsuspecting heretics. I love that.
Why not just teleport directly into the...
Because it's dangerous.
Okay. We'll allow it. Grudgingly.
I like it. Just imagine like Terminators like coming from below.
Will they even fit through manholes?
They will just blow holes through the yeah. ground, and I like it. Special divisions and their defining heraldry. The Red Fang. Small kill teams designed to do quick, stealthy insertion missions. These squads bear a red right shoulder pad bearing one of four snake designations. Cobra, Viper, Mamba, Crate. Yes, I definitely made this up in preparation for kill team.
At least he's honest.
That's cool.
Yeah.
The Death Fang, an all-Terminator company designed for covert operations of extreme danger. See? They're stealth Terminators. That's why they went in the series. Ah. It makes perfect sense.
It makes me think of Reavers using skull masks. Why? Anyways.
Identified by their dark gray armor as opposed to the bronze of the rest of the chapter. Made in honor of their parent chapter's Deathwing Terminators. Constrictor Company. A special company designed for surrounding an enemy and squeezing them until they are defeated. This company is identifiable by the black markings on their power armor. First company, Veterans and the Death Fang. Second company, Constrictor Company and the Red Fang. Notable figures of the World Serpents. Lord Salazar, the Poison Fang. Rank, position, chapter master. Status, deceased. Entombed within Jormungandr's Requiem. Notable deeds. He leads his chapter into the Jericho Reach to fight in the Achilles Crusade. They conquered several planets in the name of the Emperor of Mankind under his leadership. He was killed when he flew his flagship directly into an opposing fleet of the Black Legion after Jormungandr was consumed by the Great Rift. Lord Drago the Shepherd. Ranked position, Chapter Master Tech Marine. Status, living. Notable deeds, he led the World Serpents after the death of Salazar and has helped rebuild the chapter since then. Thoros, Marilynian Librarian. Rank, position, Chief Librarian. Status, living. Notable deeds, fought to defend the lost colony of Flam and was able to assist the colony's aspiring astropath in sending a message to the nearby World Serpent's fleet. Sidonis, the Unyielding. Rank, position, was a Devastator Marine, is currently venerable Dreadnought.
Very vulnerable.
Vulnerable Dreadnought.
He's very vulnerable.
He's emotionally vulnerable, not physically.
What did they do to my body?
You guys ever read that graphic novel of the Black Templars?
No, but I want to.
It's on my list. Awesome.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
Yeah, like I've read like...
But yeah, there's a Dreadnought issues. In it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
He's emotionally vulnerable.
Very. It's a Dreadnought.
Anyways.
Yeah.
Status, entombed in a venerable Dreadnought. Notable deeds, the only survivor of his Devastator squad who all died on Nightbreaker. He was found mortally wounded, surrounded by a dozen dead Chaos Marines. And was then saved by being entombed in a Dreadnought. He now fights for his chapter until either the warp swallows us all or the Dreadnought is destroyed, killing him forever.
That's very dark.
Captain Tarwin. Rank, position, Terminator Captain, First Company. Status, alive. Notable deeds, assisted in the retaking of Nightbreaker, personally commanded the defense of Kyrioth and the oncoming onslaught of the Iron Warriors on the planet. And that's it.
Nice.
Cool. It's a lot of cool information in that.
Yeah, I like all the little details, like the Constrictor Company, and like names a couple of these heroes that have done like a deed, and just gives you a brief little blurb on them.
Just enough to tell you like this is what they're known for.
Yeah.
I'm curious. So he's called Lord Salazar the Poison Fang. Mm-hmm. Did he use like a poison blade or like venomous ammo something?
Yeah.
Like he was called the Poison Fang, but why is he called the Poison Fang? That's something I think I'd like to know.
It might just be because the whole chapter has like that serpent motif.
Of course. Yeah. So, it could be that like their title of chapter master is the Poison Fang. It could
exactly.
be. Exactly. Yeah. But I'd like to think that, you know, he was Salazar the Poison Fang.
Yeah.
Is there any other instance of a Tech Marine being a chapter master?
Iron Hands, I believe, do that.
Okay.
Iron Fathers? Is that what they have?
Yeah, that's what they call their Tech Marines. Yeah. They're like chaplain Tech Marine conversions, but yeah.
So they fulfill a role of...
Chaplain and Tech Marine.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's totally believable. It's cool. It's unique for sure.
Yeah, but it's nice that it's not like, Oh, never, like, you've never seen it before because it's an impossibility. Yeah. It's nice to know that it's definitely within the realm of what possibility. We've seen.
Oh, yeah.
And there's, like, librarians who lead chapters.
I'm sure an apothecary could.
It's different.
I'm sure he could.
It's different.
Yeah, I don't see why not. I was just thinking of an example. I thought Red Scorpions, but they don't.
No.
They value apothecaries, but they don't. They're not
led by one.
Well, it's just interesting to me because of the doctrine you would receive as a tech marine. Like, would it alter the doctrine or the way you kind of view your role as like a chapter or your identity as a chapter?
Well, for them specifically, he's talking about how they scavenge materials. Right, but so that definitely has that changed
since he became chapter master?
No, it makes sense for them to do that because they're led by a tech marine.
To have a change.
Yeah. To be into like salvage and scavenging because, you know, the tech marines are the ones that are doing it, so why not be led by them? It totally fits, I think, their theme. I really like that. I love the scavenger feel.
Using Chaos Marine armor.
Totally plausible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Depends. He's not using Nurgle Marine armor.
How do you know?
Well, I'm sure you can cleanse and salvage, and like you could probably melt it down and reuse it. Like you could go that far with it.
You could, for sure.
But you could also you can do like cleansing rituals and stuff where you don't have to melt everything down.
I thought he said he was specifically fighting the Black Legion, which
I've seen Iron Warriors in there, Black Legion.
Oh.
I don't know if they just fight different groups.
But
I'm sure they have fought all kinds of Marines at all times. And then there's the Heresy battlefields where those Marines wouldn't necessarily have been. First, you'd have Loyalist dead bodies, so you can scavenge those. Yeah. And then you could have traitor ones that maybe weren't as warp tainted at that point in time. So you could easily scavenge too. I love that they're scavenging like old battlefields, which would have like hundreds, if not thousands, of suits of armor just like, oh yeah, just dust it off and fix it up and you're good to go.
It's only 10,000 years old.
Hey, it's 40K. Everything is 10,000 years old.
Their planet lost in the warp.
Yeah, that's a cool touch.
Cool thing. They're trying to.
It gives them something to like aim towards, like an overall goal, and not just fighting battles. Like they're in search of their planet.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly. They're not just floating. Well,
I even like that their focus right now isn't even fighting battles. It's purely like we just need to rebuild ourselves. And I think I like that he's giving it the appropriate.
So you're for nationalism, then, is what you're saying?
What like he's giving them the appropriate amount of time.
You're for looking after yourself and your own, not worrying about
not just nationalism is a betrayal of patriotism. Mark.
That's fun.
Anarchy.
That's
what
Macron said.
No, patriotism is just nationalism light.
Yeah, right. I'll let you argue with the French president.
No, I like that he's giving them ample time to rebuild themselves. And it's not like, oh, they're back. It's they're only focused on defending these worlds right now.
Yeah.
And I like when people say that they recruit, when more likely it's like kidnap. We raid your village and take your children.
Sometimes I'm sure there's some villages that see it as an honor and offer up their children to the sky gods. I'd offer myself up if they would take me.
They wouldn't. I just want
please,
to say that right now.
Please. Yeah. No, I really like it. And I also like the description of all the planets. Like they all have like different like.
Sure, they suffer terrain, from jungle world, Star Wars desert world, but whatever.
It's more realistic.
What?
To have like a single planet composed of a single thing. Yeah, like there's an...
I don't think
Jupiter isn't all gas.
Do you know how Mars many gases?
Mars
Do you know how many different gases
Mars
there are
isn't just rock. Pluto isn't
it
just
is,
ice.
It has polar ice caps, actually.
Not anymore.
Yeah, it does.
Not
Mars
anymore.
Totally
is. Oh,
yeah.
Not anymore.
No, you're right. You're right. But
there's not planets made entirely of diamond.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, of all the planets we've seen, it's more likely that you're composed of...
Earth is more unique
than
the other planets.
Yes. And terraforming can be done to whatever planet you want.
Right, but why would you terraform it into a desert?
I don't know.
It used to be a lush green world.
That's what they call exterminatus. Just
terraforming.
Reverse terraforming.
No, yeah, I genuinely liked it top to bottom, left and right.
So definitely a potato.
No, not a potato. Eric, do you know what a potato is? None of these stories are potatoes.
Potatoes, you could be delicious.
Until someone submits a potato chapter of the French Fry Legion, then they are not potatoes.
Who's a Primark Ronald McDonald?
And then he hates the Hamburglar.
Oh, that's the chaos subsect.
Yeah, exactly.
Of that.
Yeah.
Their scout marines are called tater tots. That is a potato. I will give them a potato.
That is a potato. Yeah, cool. That's all we got.
They use ketchup cannons.
I'm hungry now.
Yeah, those are the four that we have deemed worthy to share with you guys today.
All of them are worthy. We'll share all of them. Oh, you send them, we'll share them eventually.
Yeah, we're going to get through it.
Except yours, Derek. I read yours. Yours is garbage. Please don't resubmit.
A fanfic about me and Eric being
lovers in the night.
Yeah.
I don't know. I liked it.
It was a harlequin romance.
Love can bloom in 40K.
No, it can't. That's a lie. Hmm. Okay. But thank you so much, guys. I guess we'll see you back here in a couple and a little bit for the real. If when you go, when you go to and the potato, you get a potato for. Uh-huh. Bye.
See ya.
Peace.
See ya.
Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.